to bluebirdcare.ie, a realistic alternative to residential care.
News Talk 106 to 108. Just gone 11:45. News Talk 106 to 108. And a little bit of competition for you. If you have kids, you will enjoy this. The Little Big Club with Barney and friends. And if you don't have kids, I really wouldn't recommend going to see Barney as an adult. I really wouldn't. Barney and friends, Bob the Builder, Angelina Ballerina, Thomas the Tank Engine, and many more. It's in the Olympia Theatre from the 28th of June to the 1st of July. If you'd like to win a family pass, answer this question. Who does the voice of Bob the Builder? If you know the answer, text your answer and your name to 53106. That'll cost you 30 cents, and we'll have a winner for at the end of the show. We're also going to talk to our Demo of the Day author a little bit later on as well. But there are U2 fans, and there are extreme U2 fans. I think it's fair to say Eric Shevers is an extreme U2 fan. He actually appeared on the Oprah Winfrey Show in 2006 with a pair of custom painted jeans for U2. Since then, he's written a book entitled I'm a Fan, How I Married U2 Into My Life Without Going to the Altar, and he joins us now. Good morning, Eric. How are you today?
Good morning, Tom. I'm calling you from Chicago, Illinois, and I actually have a water feature, which is Lake Michigan.
Right. How is Chicago this morning?
You know, it's wonderful. It's bright. It's sunny. The protesters for NATO are gone, and we're happy to have our city back.
Great stuff. I know the Paradise Club very well. You too play the Paradise Club. Have you ever seen them there?
I've seen them many times here in Chicago over their vast career. Several night stands in a row, and it's great to have them in town when they come.
How did this all start? How did you become so fascinated by them?
You know, it's an interesting story. It really started when my mom married my stepfather. Unbeknownst to me, you know, my stepfather's a scholar in James Joyce and Irish studies. And as I say at the beginning of the book, you know, you would think that'd be the on-ramp to my U2 fandom. But it was his academic career that allowed me to travel and have sabbatical years abroad, where I saw things that the band also saw. And once my peers turned me on to them, after initial rejections, once they turned me on to the band, I started linking what I saw as a child, thanks to traveling and living in Europe.
What kind of things?
Well, for example, we lived in London in 77, 78 during the punk boom. Now, granted, I was 10 years old and, you know, I wasn't going to see the clubs and the Sex Pistols and so forth and so on. But, you know, I saw the movement from a child's view on the streets of London. And, you know, that impacted the band because that's really sort of where they came from. You know, they came from the sort of post-punk movement.
Yeah.
Another thing that I saw, we happened to be traveling. We lived in the south of France, so we happened to be traveling through Paris in 81 in December when the Polish Solidarity marchers took over the streets of Paris. And I, you know, we just thought it was just a protest. And then once I started becoming a fan of the band and knew that the song New Year's Day was sort of sunk into that movement, not specifically that day, but that movement, you know, I sort of started patching this relationship to them and their music.
Right. So I know initially you were into other types of bands, heavier bands, Kiss and AC/DC. So what was you haven't liked you two. So what was it started to melt the ice and get you interested in them?
I think it was my peer group. You know, my friends were really, they sort of were anti-80s singles, music, you know, one-hit wonders. And so they were looking for something a little more intuitive. And so they were really talking about this band, and I just, you know, I never glommed on to them. And then I went out on my own self-discovery. You know, I bought a cassette player. I listened to Live Under Blood Red Sky, and I immersed myself into them on my own. And I came out the backside. I'm like, you know, I think I can like these guys. And that's sort of how it started.
And when you go through bits of the book, there's bits of the book where you talk about depression and stuff. How did they help you at times when you were depressed?
You know, I think there is a reality to their music, and mostly to their lyrics, and there's a grounding. And so when I needed them to get me through hardships, for example, taking case in point, when my stepfather passes away, I turned to the song Stay Far Away So Close. I mean, it's not really based upon angelic loss, but I sort of twisted the lyrics into what I needed to get through that period of my life.
And does no other music do this for you?
No, I don't think so. I think once I hopped on the bandwagon, you know, I was full board, you know, punch my ticket and I'm on. It's something that just, it's intrinsic with them.
Now, there's a photograph of you in the front of the book getting an autograph from Bono. How close have you gotten to the band over your life? What happened on the Oprah show?
Well, let's talk about getting close to the band. I've actually met them several times on the streets here in Chicago. That picture that is on the front cover is of me and Bono in 2001, where he's signing a custom-painted jacket that I sent the band in 1983 or so, in which I tried to do a merchandising deal with them. I'm an artist, graphic designer. And then let's sort of launch forward to, you spoke about Oprah Winfrey. One of our neighbors used to be an executive producer of the show, and I sort of kept it in my hip pocket that, hey, if I want to see Bono speak, especially with Oprah Winfrey, you know, I just dropped her a note, and basically we went to the same university, which is where I, you know, saw the band live for the first time, and she granted me access. And I happened to wear one of those pairs of jeans that actually sent Edge to start the conversation. And when I stood up to ask a question, and this is long before the tapes are rolling, the MC of the show said to me, hey, wait, I'll answer the question in a minute, but where'd you get those jeans? And I said, you know, I painted them. And she's like, you want to come up here and talk about them? I said, absolutely. And so they brought me up on stage, and they sat me down, and they interviewed me.
How wonderful. A life-defining moment for you. Have you ever been to see them in Ireland at all?
No, you know, everybody asks me that. Everybody, you know. And no, I have not. I have friends that have seen them in Ireland, and yeah. I'm sure I will eventually get there at some point in time.
And you haven't fallen out of love with them at any time. Even No Line on the Horizon didn't drive you over the edge, no?
You know, I take, you know, at the very end of the book, I do get sort of critical about the last three albums. And you know, as a fan, I think it's honest to sort of sit and say, not as a reviewer, but as a fan, and saying, look, you know, guys, the prime that you really had was Octane Baby, the Joshua Tree.
Yeah.
Of course, I love pop, and pop didn't go over very well. But, you know, the last three albums, I do like Tom. I think there's some fabulous work on there. But as a whole, yeah. I don't think they really pushed the creativity. And I think it's sort of, they did try.
Creativity is a hard thing to push. Eric, I'm afraid I'm running out of time, but thank you very much for joining us. The book is called I'm a Fan, How I Married You Two Into My Life Without Going to the Altar. And I'd say you're one of many fans who could write similar books, because they certainly connect with their audience, no question about that. Thank you very much for joining us from Chicago today.